Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, July 15th. Santa Fe's 10th annual International Folk Art Market concluded Sunday with reports of increased attendance and higher sales. Today's New Mexican reports that Sunday saw 7,000 people take in the event at Museum Hill, with sales over $1.3 million, a new record for a single day, and some 20% higher than last year. Roughly 90% of the money taken in goes home with the artists, many of them from countries where the average wage is just $3 a day. At tonight's meeting of Santa Fe's Finance Committee, they'll consider approval of that resolution which would ban retail establishments within city limits from packaging goods in one-time-use plastic carry-out bags, while establishing a fee for paper grocery bags that stores can impose. That matter was previously approved by the Public Utilities Committee and is on track for a public hearing before full City Council in late August. Albuquerque's water wells are not being contaminated by that big, decades-old underground fuel spill at Kirtland Air Force Base. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, an entity within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, has concluded that neither base personnel nor the general public have been exposed thus far to the contaminants. They add that though there are future risks, Kirtland's planned remedial actions should prevent contamination. A public meeting will be coming up July 30th at the Albuquerque-Bernalillo County Water Protection Advisory Board to present the findings and answer questions. U.S. Homeland Security Director Janet Napolitano spent her weekend in Albuquerque and Santa Fe after announcing Friday she will leave her post in September. The Albuquerque Journal reports that Napolitano, who grew up in the Duke City, took in a performance at the Santa Fe Opera Saturday night. Napolitano was selected by President Obama in 2009 to head Homeland Security while she was still serving as Arizona's governor. She'll now become president for the University of California, overseeing 10 campuses with a $24 billion budget. Starting tomorrow, Rio Rancho will begin to accept in-person absentee ballots for its upcoming special municipal election August 20th. Voters there are being asked whether or not they should rescind their 2008 Municipal Higher Education Facilities Gross Receipts Tax and instead halve the amount from a quarter of 1% to just 1/8. This will be Rio Rancho's first municipal election requiring citizens to present photo ID in order to cast a ballot, following a 2012 voter-approved change to the city charter. Santa Fe County advises that today is the deadline for anyone interested in serving as a member of the County Tax Valuation Protest Board. The protest board consists of two members and two alternates. The remaining vacancy on that board is for an alternate and does not require experience in the field of property valuation. Candidates must be registered to vote in Santa Fe County and may not be employed by the state, a school district, or hold an elective public office. A series of thunderstorms late Sunday afternoon made lights flicker in some areas of Santa Fe, but in Albuquerque they went out and stayed out for hours. PNM reported that at the outage's height, some 10,000 Duke City residents were in the dark. The vast majority were back online well before midnight. Drought conditions are having profound impacts across the West. Here in New Mexico, the Bureau of Land Management says 93% of New Mexico's rangelands and pastures are currently rated poor to very poor, with very little water and natural greens available to animals and livestock. But recent rains here have halted further deterioration. Now, the BLM is focusing on Nevada, where there's a growing crisis with wild horses. The BLM has been hauling in 5,000 gallons of water daily along with supplemental hay. However, they've noted the animals are not eating or drinking. They're now arranging for the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service to investigate. And weather for Santa Fe. There's a promise of rain across much of our state today. A storm is moving in from the east, and meteorologist Todd Shoemake with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque says that's unusual.
That in itself is pretty atypical for July, and then the strength of this system, I think, is what really is pretty notable. This system is bringing a lot of moisture with it. I think as we go into the afternoon, I'll really be focusing towards the western half of New Mexico. Along with that will be the potential for some localized heavy rainfall and perhaps flash flooding.
Highs today only expected to make the low 70s with an 80% chance for showers, some possibly heavy. Rain chances fall back to 40% tonight. Tuesday brings a 50% chance for showers and temperatures still cool with a high of 75. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature is 62 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon here on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
Santa Fe psychologist Dr. Penelope Penland is pleased to help present KSFR programming. Dr. Penland's diverse practice fosters the emergence of each person's authentic self in all domains of life. Like KSFR, she strives for thoughtful and independent inquiry to foster individual freedom and responsibility in the context of community. Dr. Penelope Penland, 983-3990.
At noon on KSFR now moves to today's feature stories. The federal government has paid out more than $405 million in compensation and medical coverage to some 4,200 people who worked at LANL or were contractors there and exposed to radioactive materials. For New Mexico as a whole, which then includes the uranium miners in the western part of the state, the totals are nearly $1.1 billion given to more than 8,800 such workers. KSFR News reporter Joe Day attended a recent informational gathering called Cold War Patriots, and he files this report.
I'm Joe Day, and I'm at an informational gathering put on by an organization called Cold War Patriots. Its motto is, and I quote, "Honoring nuclear and uranium workers who proudly served our country," end quote. The meeting is being held in the shadow of the Los Alamos National Labs, and of course many of those attending worked at those labs. The idea of this gathering is to make former nuclear and uranium workers aware of some of the services for which they might be eligible. What is your name?
Carlos Ralph Martinez.
Mr. Martinez, you worked, I understand, in Los Alamos for how many years?
20. I started as a janitor. Worked my way up to all the way to the labs. So I started working in contaminated areas when I went with the labs. And that's all I did, removing asbestos and working with radioactive materials and radioactive waste.
Do you have effects from that work?
I think I'm starting to, yes.
What kind of symptoms and so forth?
Numbness of my fingers, lost weight, lost my teeth. When I retired, I went to, in Española, to Johns Hopkins University. And they took some tests and they found a spot in one of my lungs. And I think that's a lot of, it's affecting me a lot.
Do you think the people that are organizing this meeting can help you in your efforts to get compensated?
That's why I'm here.
I spoke with Kevin Fitzgerald and Kelly Green, who work in outreach for the nonprofit Cold War Patriots organization. Kevin, tell me a little bit about this organization.
Okay. Cold War Patriots, it's a nonprofit organization, and what the goal is to be a resource to connect a lot of people who worked in the nuclear weapons industry, in the mining industry, to connect them with resources and individuals and assistance to help them get approved for the program, the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Program. And so Cold War Patriots, their main focus and main vision is not only to connect them to other resources, but also to lobby for them, be their voice in Washington. We were in Washington about a couple months ago, met with Senator Udall, Congressman Lujan, to make sure that they're aware of changes that we like to see in the program and that type of thing. So there's a company called Professional Case Management. Professional Case Management is a company that provides the home health care benefit under the program, which is one of the medical benefits. And they were finding that they were getting a lot of calls from people that were in the early stages of their condition. They had worked there. They had noticed that they'd gotten some illnesses, had some medical conditions, and they had no place to turn as far as who to help them or what resources. So the president of our company decided that it would be good to have a nonprofit organization that would be able to connect these people to those resources.
What is your name, sir?
My name is Valerio Armijo.
Mr. Armijo, you worked at Los Alamos for how many years?
I worked at Los Alamos at the lab for 37 and a half, and then I went back as a contractor for Quest Communications for 4 years.
Why did you come to this gathering?
Just to gather more information as far as resources available, health-wise, and it's been very helpful. We picked up more information than what we already had.
Are there effects from your work at Los Alamos that you would care to share with me?
Well, yes, there's two. Toxin contamination and also hearing loss, which are both attributed to the lab.
To what degree do you feel that the federal government needs to be responsible for people like you?
Absolutely, they should, because for a long time it was just denial, and you worked there and you were done and that's it. Nobody ever shared any information with us. Actually, all of this was just handed down from one employer to another, from people that have actually gone through it. That's how I found out.
Should be 100%
responsible. Mrs. Armijo, what you were going to add to that, please?
That the government should be 100% responsible for this.
Mr. Armijo, you were telling me that you have taken upon it yourself to pass on information to some of your friends who are in a similar situation and who may not know about some of the procedures to deal with the federal government about this.
Absolutely. Some of these people are timid or are afraid to file their claims. You know, we're actually going against the Department of Labor, and it's a big organization. And I have helped them with their claims as far as being able to really understand what they're signing and what it's all about, what they're entitled to.
Why do you think they're reluctant to do it?
I don't know. It's just one of those things that we as Hispanics have always been, thought of that we're minority sort of. And if we speak up, we're going to get retaliated against. And that's what the problem was at the labs, that if you spoke up, you were retaliated against.
Mrs. Armijo, you have a little different view about why some of these folks don't want to file claims.
Yeah, I just think men in general don't like to open up and say that or admit that they really are sick.
I'm here with Kelly Green, also with the organization. Kelly, what kind of ailments in general do people show up, or are people showing up with?
Okay. Well, in general, as you may know, a lot of these individuals were exposed to radiation or toxic substances. So a lot of the illnesses are cancer-related or lung pulmonary type related. So those are kind of the main ones. That there are other things that come up, but those are the main ones that are covered under the program.
Regarding this particular meeting, what kind of services are you familiarizing with these folks with?
Well, at our resource fair, there's all kinds of individuals there, anything from a home health care company to lawyer services to having the Energy Resource Center here to help individuals. There are companies that provide medical equipment. So any kind, a variety of resources for them.
For KSFR News, this is Joe Day reporting.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Farmers Market, providing fresh, locally grown food to our community. The Farmers Market is now open every Saturday and Tuesday from 7 a.m. to noon in the rail yard. The Southside Market takes place on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 6 at the Santa Fe Place Mall parking lot, Zafferano entrance. On Sundays from 10 to 4, the market hosts the Rail Yard Artisans Market, featuring fine arts and crafts, food, music, and more. To learn more, visit SantaFeFarmersMarket.com.
19 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The severe drought conditions we've experienced throughout the Southwest in general and New Mexico in particular has led to major problems for farmers and others who rely on healthy stream flows for drinking water. Flow of the water in the Colorado River Basin is projected to decrease significantly over the next few years. Now a group called Protect the Flow has released a study showing an impact to homeowners. Molly Mugglestone is co-director of that group.
My group, Protect the Flows, is a network of nearly 900 businesses that rely on a healthy Colorado River. And we have looked at the different ways that the river flows affect the economy. And this is the Colorado River and all of its tributaries as well. And so we looked at the real estate values associated with riverfront properties and properties with a river view. Not only did a lower river impact the economy in terms of people recreating on it and fishing and enjoying it, rafting, those kinds of things, this study shows that it also would impact property values.
Overall, the decline in values was significant.
We did the study in Farmington, New Mexico, Sedona, Arizona, Aspen, Colorado, and Grand County, Colorado, which includes the areas of Winter Park and Grand Lake. What we found was across the various four areas, it's different in each area. The real estate properties would decline. Across the board, it was an average of about 9.5% or nearly 10% of a decrease in property values. If the river does decline as it's projected to, this is what real estate professionals think would happen, you know, on average in these areas.
New Mexico did slightly better than the national average, but the impact could still be significant.
In Farmington, prices for riverfront properties would most likely decrease by about 8% based on the reduced river flows, which were forecasted in the Colorado River Basin Study, which is a major study that was done through the Department of the Interior and the seven basin states. When you looked at that hypothetical riverfront home with the current sales price of about $290,000, the projected decrease would be about $24,000.
Although the drought is caused by factors beyond our immediate control, there are some ways to lessen the impact.
What we talk about in terms of solutions are prioritizing conservation and efficiency. The most cost-effective way to deal with this is to implement conservation measures that can be implemented in communities like Santa Fe, which already does a really great job across the West.
Molly Mugglestone of Protect the Flow. And the U.S. Senate will hold an Energy and Natural Resources, Water and Power Subcommittee meeting tomorrow to discuss ways to minimize the impact of decreased river flows. Our state has had some good economic news regarding exports. John Barella is the secretary for the New Mexico Economic Development Department and joins us now. John, tell us about exports from New Mexico.
Well, the exports in New Mexico are phenomenal. We have moved in 2.5 years from 38th in the country in terms of export growth to number one in the country in export growth. So we're going to continue to push hard those export numbers, and also recognize that according to the Department of Commerce, for every $1 billion worth of exports, we create 6,000 jobs here in New Mexico. So we've doubled our exports to well over $1 billion worth of exports. So that's 6,000 new jobs we've created.
Why the increase?
Well, I think, you know, there's a number of reasons. First of all, we have to credit the enterprises in New Mexico, small, medium, and yes, there are some large businesses in New Mexico that create competitive products and services. And we've also in the state been very focused on strategic trading partners. We've taken an approach in the department, as has the governor, to target certain geographies around the world. So we've had particular success, of course, with our southern neighbors, Mexico. But we've also had some great success with Brazil. We've seen some growth in certain parts of Europe and in Israel, and those are natural trading partners, we think, for New Mexico and for New Mexico products.
And what are some of the things we're exporting?
We're seeing dramatic growth in machine goods. We're seeing dramatic growth in value-added food production and agricultural-type products. We're seeing some raw goods being exported, the raw steel, believe it or not, raw metals and that sort of thing that are supplying our twin plants. D-twin plants in Ciudad Juarez. We are also seeing some high-tech growth as well, but those are the areas that we see the strongest growth in.
You mentioned the increase leading to employment opportunities for New Mexicans. A recent report suggests that by 2020, we will have more jobs than qualified candidates to fill them. How do you view this issue?
Well, it's not only an issue for New Mexico. This is an issue for our entire country. You know, I just read a very interesting article that said that Mexico, a country of about half of their size population-wise, is going to be producing as many engineers as the United States in this upcoming year. That, to me, is a wake-up call for all of us. Mexico is doing a great job to diversify their economy, educate their workforce. We need to get beyond the rhetoric in this country, do some real dynamic, real things to get our folks trained for the jobs of the future. And STEM jobs, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics jobs are the ones that are going to be dominant in the next decade or so, not only in our country, but here in New Mexico. That's why Governor Martinez is pushing very, very hard education reform, workforce development reform. She's created an employability partnership task force that's focused exactly on this issue, creating jobs for the future here in New Mexico.
There's also a growing concern both here in New Mexico and nationwide about a blue-collar gap, having more mechanical and technical jobs than people to fill them.
That is, again, a potential problem not only in New Mexico but around the country. Let me give you one specific example with the supply and demand issue that we have right now with blue-collar jobs, two in particular. If you are in the truck driving business or you want to become a truck driver and you want to go out and get your commercial driver's license, a CDL, with the appropriate endorsements to haul certain types of cargo, there are jobs available in New Mexico as we speak that will pay anywhere from $90,000 to $100,000 a year without a college degree, just being trained to be a truck driver. Likewise, if you are a welder, there is a dramatic shortage of welders around the state, and you can earn a wage that will exceed most college degrees. So those are two specific examples of where you're absolutely right. We have to start offering these types of opportunities to young people in terms of technical training, in terms of what we are doing in the high schools, and what we do beyond.
Secretary John Barella from the Economic Development Department, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
62 degrees in Santa Fe at 12:26. Researchers at the University of New Mexico have been looking at cancer from a different, new perspective. Now they will also host scientists from around the world doing the same type of work. Here is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
Researchers at the University of New Mexico Cancer Center have been looking deep into the functions of cancer cells to try and find clues to the diagnosis and treatment of that dreaded disease. Dr. Scott Ness is a professor of internal medicine at the university.
My laboratory is one of a number of laboratories that studies what the difference is between normal cells and tumor cells. And we're trying to understand these basic differences in how genes are regulated in tumor cells so that we could potentially develop new kinds of therapies or ways to target some of these genes in order to either kill the tumor cells or to get them to become more normal again. This area of research is about special proteins called oncogenes or oncoproteins, which are cancer genes or cancer proteins. These are things that regulate lots of other genes in the cell, and they're the ones that control whether a cell is more normal or more like a tumor.
He sees some definite benefits of his research on direct care of patients with malignancies.
Although it's possible that something like immunization or genetic manipulation might someday be possible, that's not really possible at this time. What's more likely is, and what we're trying to do, is develop new ways of screening for drugs, new kinds of drugs that might be able to affect these kinds of processes and to identify the targets. Cells are actually very complicated machines, and if we can pick out the right place to throw the wrench in the works, we might be able to kill these tumor cells. That's the idea. I think these kinds of studies could lead to new clinical trials within the next few years. And then clinical trials are designed to test the safety first and the usefulness of new kinds of drugs or therapy options. And those take several years. So before a regular patient could be treated, it would still be quite a few years, I think.
There's hope that any new treatments made possible by this research will lead to less toxic treatment options.
Standard chemotherapy really relies on very toxic drugs. They're not really targeted to anything. And so the new approach that we're all working on is to try to make much more targeted types of therapies to specific things so that they'll be more effective and less toxic to patients. But that's a much more difficult thing because we have to understand the basic biology of the cancer cell much more than when you just apply a broad-based poison, essentially. Some of the most effective treatments now are very targeted drugs, and that's kind of led the charge for trying to design more and better new targeted drugs for other kinds of cancers.
With Dr. Ness's help, the university is sponsoring an international medical meeting to bring together scientists from around the world who are studying the new field of the molecular biology of cancer.
Yes, we're very excited about this conference. This conference is sponsored by a foundation called the Adenoid Cystic Carcinoma Research Foundation. They're a foundation that funds research about a type of salivary gland tumor called adenoid cystic carcinoma. And it's also sponsored by the UNM Cancer Center here in Albuquerque. The meeting will bring together researchers from around the world, from as far away as Australia and Sweden and Germany, and plus all over the United States. And then they're going to be talking about both the basic biology of these kinds of cancers, also other kinds of related cancers that are caused by similar mechanisms, including leukemias, and breast cancer, and colon cancer. But the really interesting part is we're also bringing together people who are experts in devising new kinds of drug treatments and screening for new kinds of drugs through high-throughput methods. So we hope that this will lead to better and new collaborations between people and perhaps some new kinds of therapies.
Dr. Scott Ness from the University of New Mexico.
This meeting, I think, is a really excellent example of how the UNM Cancer Center is bringing together people who are experts in biology and research, along with people who develop new technologies and who treat patients. And this is that's kind of the basic idea behind the Cancer Center here at UNM.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
31 minutes past the hour here in the KSFR newsroom. A low-pressure center oddly moving from east to west will make rain very likely across much of the state today into tomorrow. Chances for precipitation throughout our local area run as high as 80%, though meteorologist Todd Shoemake with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque says the heaviest rains probably won't fall in Santa Fe.
We are expecting rainfall for the Santa Fe area. Unfortunately, I think the heavier rainfall will probably be reorganizing a little bit west of Santa Fe and kind of into the western half of the state. So while there is some potential for rainfall, measurable rainfall at that in Santa Fe, I think the heavier and potentially more problematic totals would be found farther west.
We asked Shoemake if the rains will help make a dent in those western and southern portions of the state with severely low precipitation totals thus far this year.
Absolutely. We're looking at some of these storms will probably be easily producing rainfall rates of 2 to 3 inches per hour, and some of them will be moving pretty slowly. So when you combine that scenario together, that can lead to flash flooding. We certainly are seeing a drought and deficit in a lot of places, and we're just really begging for the rainfall, but we certainly don't want it all at one time. So that's one of our concerns, and that's why we prompted the flash flood watch for much of western New Mexico.
And the meteorologist also says the weather pattern will likely remain moist throughout the week and beyond.
This upper low will be impacting the state, if not directly, indirectly, through at least Wednesday or Thursday. It's going to kind of lose some of its strength as we go day by day. So Tuesday, while this upper-level low will be parked pretty much right over eastern New Mexico, it will begin to lose a little bit of its strength. That being said, though, we are expecting a pretty healthy moisture field to accompany it. So we do have plenty of moisture in the works for Tuesday, Wednesday, and into really the remainder of the week for much of the state. So I think our thunderstorm chances are going to stay somewhat elevated through the remainder of the week and right on into the weekend.
Meteorologist Todd Shoemake with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque. 33 minutes past the hour here at KSFR. Here at the bottom of the hour, it is the at noon custom to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
As you know, Santa Fe isn't just a home for people. We also are home to animals, domestic and wild. Sometimes the four-legged wild seems to visit Santa Fe more often, like in a drought. But I live near the dog park on the north end of town, and I've been visited by fox and coyote and feathered friends like quail and roadrunner. Downtown we've seen bear and mountain lion, but the other day, early in the morning, I was downtown and saw a rabbit. The rabbit seemed watchful, but also very appreciative of the fact that there were hardly any vehicles. Good for the rabbit, but, thought I, perhaps also good for an urban coyote downtown and out looking for an early morning snack. As I drove by the rabbit, I waved and yelled, "Good morning, Mr. or Mrs. Rabbit." I startled the rabbit, and it ran out in front of a car and was killed. I'm kidding. But I do hope the rabbit had a lucky rabbit foot. Or feet. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here. Thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard and Joe Day. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.